And if you could say your name.
My name is Mary Lee Fithian.
And are you lay or clergy?
I'm a clergy person, retired.
With the in your denomination?
United Methodist Church.
Mm-hmm. When and where were you born?
I was born April 1st, 1936 in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Oh, okay. Where did you go to school, graduate or divinity school?
I did my BS and an MA at the University of Minnesota and an MDiv at United Theological Seminary in New Brighton.
Okay. And how and when did you first become aware of feminist theology?
Oh, gosh. Way, way back. When I was in my 30s and 40s, I would go to church. I would come home in tears. And I never knew why. And my family would say, "What's the matter?" And I'd say, I have no idea what's the matter, but I've been at church and I wasn't there. I wasn't there in what was talked about, what was sung about, anything. And the language really hurt. And my kids said to me, "Well, why don't you quit going to church?" And I said, "Because that's not God that's made me sad. It's the people in the church." And so I stayed in this church for a long time. And along with two other women, we tried to get the church to move toward using inclusive language, and instead we got shunned. We'd be standing with a person on each side and they'd talk around you as if you weren't there. And it finally got to the point where I just had to leave, but just left that church. Yeah. And it was after that I went to seminary. One of my friends said to me, as we were talking about this, "Well, why don't you go to seminary?" And I said, "Oh, okay." But actually, I had wanted to be a pastor way back when I was a kid, and I couldn't because I was a woman. So I guess maybe that was the first time.
Yeah.
You know, I could not become a pastor because I was a woman. And so I went on to do other things that I considered ministry, but they weren't in the church. And so I guess it really goes way back.
You know, I'm intrigued that you started. How did you know about inclusive language to even be able to talk about it at your church? Do you remember?
I probably didn't use that term.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was just the feeling that everything that was good mm-hmm. was male.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And everything that was bad was related to Eve mm-hmm. and to women. And women were discounted. And women were, actually, it must have gone even further to that because we were at another church for a while before this one. Women couldn't even be ushers. They couldn't serve on the church council. And I remember a pastor coming to me and, or not coming to me, but coming to a group where, I guess it was a Bible study, and he said, "Oh, we've called 200 people today, this week, and we can't get anybody to usher, for we don't have enough people to usher." And I said, "Well, I'd be happy to usher." And he said, "Yeah, but we usually have men." I said, "Well, what difference does it make, you know?" And I said, if it's a matter of wearing pants, I'll wear pants. If you need to have matching set,
yeah,
I'll wear pants." And he hesitated, and he said, "Well, I'll get back to you." And he never did. And I went to church, and I was in the choir, and we were lining up to march in, and there were four young girls, teenage girls, ushering.
Really?
And he said, "See?" He said, "We're letting girls usher." I said, "Yeah, but what about women?"
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, there's a lot of little incidents in my life as I go back and look at it that mm-hmm. that I probably didn't realize it was theology. It was what was happening to me and what was trying to separate me from God.
Yeah. Mary Lee, what denomination was that?
Well, that part of it was Lutheran.
Was it?
Yeah. And there was an incident in that church that a lot of us left because of, of some harm they did to another person. Mm-hmm. And so we went over to the Methodist Church. And Jack, my husband, had grown up in the Methodist Church, so it was kind of a, mm-hmm. you know, a good fit. But anyway, so the part where the shunning and the mm-hmm. and the going home with tears and so forth, that was the United Methodist Church.
Mm-hmm. 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 So when and where did you experience formal, like, feminist theology?
Probably in seminary.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember...
1984, I went to seminary.
Yeah. Do you remember anything that you read or something that really grabbed you that made you think, oh,
well, everything at UTS was mm-hmm. you had to use inclusive language. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was required mm-hmm. at the time. I hear it's not so required now, but it was mm-hmm. required at the time. And everybody talked about it. And I don't think I actually took a course in feminist theology, but it just was sort of interwoven into everything mm-hmm. that we did there at seminary. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. If we could move to reimagining, that was really sure. helpful, Mary Lee. Could you talk about your relationship to the reimagining community, official positions, planner?
Okay. Well, when the World Council of Churches did their Ecumenical Decade for Women, I was a part of the original planning committee in the Twin Cities, and Sally Hill was representing. Well, she was staff person for whatever effort came out of that. And so that committee had to think about what it was that they were going to be doing to recognize that decade.
Mm-hmm.
And, we had all kinds of ideas. You know, we'd have hearing sessions around the state. It was all little kinds of things. And so... what's her name? Not Sally, mm-hmm. but the other Presbyterian that
Mary
was,
Ann Lundy.
Yeah. Yes. Bad senior moment there. Mary Ann Lundy was like the staff person for the National mm-hmm. Council of Churches, and we had thought maybe doing some kind of a conference. But we weren't really thinking real big, you know. But then when they had their committee and they were thinking about doing some stuff, Marianne kind of suggested we get together and talk about maybe ways in which we could work together. And they held their meeting in Minneapolis, and we sat down and talked with them. And they kind of, now this is my interpretation of what happened, but... Mm-hmm. As the thing went on, we kind of were getting the message that, who do you think you are trying to do something big like this? You're just a small little group, and it'll never work, and no, we don't want to work with you. And we were stunned.
Mm-hmm.
We were stunned. And I remember afterwards we just sort of shaking our heads and some almost in tears because they didn't seem to want to work with us. And we said, well, we can do it anyways. Mm-hmm. And so then we started planning a conference. And it just kept getting bigger and bigger. And thanks to people like Mary Ann and people out of various denominations, we got some backing in different ways from various denominations so we could do something, and it turned into being something really international. We sat down and thought, well, what are we going to call this? So we came up with the word reimage. And Sally wrote it down, but it turned out she wrote the word reimagine instead of reimage. And we liked that better.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. So really, the actual planning was very local.
It was very local. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, it was very local.
And it is amazing that it became that you all had such a huge conference.
It did. And you know, there were over 2,000 people there, and they were from all over. I mean, all over. We managed to raise money so that we could give scholarships mm-hmm. to people coming from other countries, and... It was just amazing.
And what was the original idea? I mean, what were you thinking the conference was going to accomplish?
It was basically, I think, at least in my mind, and that's almost 25 years ago, so
sure.
I can't remember for sure, but part of it was that we just felt that we needed to bring the woman's voice to the church.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to do that was to help people to realize that we're all theologians. You don't have to go to seminary to be a theologian. That when I was dealing with those women in that church, I was being a theologian and I didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and part of at least my part of it, because I one time got told I was dumbing it down, was that I wanted to do it in a language that people could understand.
Yeah.
Because when I went to seminary the first time and they started using words that like hermeneutics and whatever else, all those theological words, I thought, well, what am I doing here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't understand any of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so we weren't planning on doing a conference, I think, that was just for clergy. It was meant to be for mostly women.
Yes.
And to celebrate women.
Yeah.
You know, and to realize that when we talk about being made in the image of God, that God is female too, you know, male, female, none of it, all of it, you know. But we're all, because it has more to do with soul and spirit than it has to do with gender.
And when did you, do you remember as a planning group, when you started to realize that this was going to be 2,000 people and it was going to be large, did you anticipate that? Or
I don't think we did it initially, but when we had to start putting people on waiting lists.
Mm, that's when, yeah.
You know, because at first we were thinking, wow, you know, we're committing to contracts with convention center, we're working with hotels and saying, well, we'll have this many people, and you know, and then we think, and what if it doesn't happen? Because we'll be stuck for all of this expense, and then we also weren't sure about, you know, speakers, were they going to be interested enough in doing something like this? And we had some rules that no matter what kind of a speaker you were, whether you were one that talked in a plenary session, in a big session, or one of the workshops, you got paid the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we weren't, we and and I think people were curious. And one of the things that really delighted me, because I was in charge of registration,
uh-huh.
And one of the things that really delighted me was seeing that some of the people from that church where I'd been shunned came.
Really?
I don't know what their response was, but when I saw them there, they were very excited to be there. And I don't know how they felt when they left, but,
mm-hmm.
You know, so we were reaching some of the very people that needed to be reached.
And I'm curious, do you remember how you came up with the speakers and how many of them accepted?
I don't remember how many accepted, however many were in the
right.
Were
but
in the
did program, you have a pretty good percentage of acceptance rates? Do you remember?
Well, Sally Hill would have been the one to ask about that because she was responsible, but we did a lot of brainstorming.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, are we representing the whole world? Is there a diverse voice, not just you know, white middle class theologians? Are we looking at a lot of different kinds of things? The way theology addresses different aspects of life.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
and meaning,
for example, like God, Jesus, community, is that
well,
what you mean?
Well, we said reimagining God, reimagining the church, reimagining Jesus, you know, that was what reimagining was referring to. And so there were just those, and also the lesbians.
Yeah.
We had a large contingent of lesbian women there. And one of the most exciting parts of it was when so many of them came out
mm-hmm.
at that conference.
Mm-hmm.
They were invited to come forward,
mm-hmm.
and they did.
Now, how did that happen?
I don't even know, because I was out at the registration
desk. I was going to ask about that, your experience of the conference. Before I do, though, I wanted to ask one other question. You said reimagining was the word that grabbed people. Either do you remember why? Do you remember why for you or for anyone else? Why reimagining? What did that mean to you?
I think because most of us have imagined God and the church and so forth in a masculine way. You know, the old man with the white long beard is God, and the ones made in God's image are the men. And I wanted to reimagine that because my life was affected by it, and and it had hurt me so much.
Yeah.
And I part of that hurt is still there because my children have rejected the church.
Mm-hmm.
Claim themselves to be atheists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've hear that from a lot of my friends too.
Yeah.
They saw me being hurt by the church, being hurt by people who represented God,
mm-hmm.
being hurt by people who were supposed to be in community with me because of our relationship to God.
Yeah.
And they didn't want any part of it.
Mm.
So that it still kind of hurts, you know?
Yeah.
How
about the 1993 conference? What was your experience of that?
Well, it was mostly at the registration desk, but one of the things that was interesting to me was that we assigned people tables.
Mm.
Because we didn't want friends sitting just with friends. We wanted to expand the community.
Oh.
And so that was, people would say, well, why can't I sit with so-and-so? And we tried to explain to them. And how, as I think as the conference went on, that wasn't as much of an issue. But that first day kind of was. And then the tables got moved in different places in the room. And I'm not an artistic person, and so if I had been sitting in there, I probably, you know, doing the stuff at the table, I probably would have been a complete flop. It would have been colors, not pictures. But to me, that was exciting because it was letting something. Women have a way of being creative. Well, so do men, but I mean differently than men do. I think, anyways,
yeah.
At least as I look at my husband and I, that we both are creative creatures in our own way, but we aren't the same. And so round tables was exciting, doing the artwork and then the other part of it was having to deal with the people who were there to cause trouble.
Was that part of, did you end up doing that? Oh, you mean after the conference?
No, in the conference.
Oh, you know, say something about that.
Wanted to be in there, and we let them come as press. We had a place for press, but no, they wanted to be at the table.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew of at least one person who was representing a real fundamentalist, anti-reimagining group that... we ended up moving and sitting with Jean Audrey Powers.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Who knew her and was able to keep that under control. And I think it was that one, or maybe it was one of the following ones, where I actually had to go out on the floor and ask somebody to leave.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And somebody from the IRD who registered as, wanted to register as a participant, but we said no because people were promised that they would, you know, there'd be some confidentiality, and we knew if they were there, they'd be writing about it and so forth. And,
right.
And sent them their money back and said, you can come as press and it won't cost you anything.
Mm-hmm.
But they still tried to get out on the floor.
What do you remember why the person was asked to leave?
Because they were not... because they were press and they were supposed to stay in the press.
Oh, and they were sitting at the round table.
They tried to.
Yes, I see. Yes.
Do
you remember, were you expecting that this press, these groups would come?
We were expecting something, but we didn't really know what. Because when some of the publicity went out, there was a reporter here in town, also United Methodist, by the way, was a religious reporter for the local paper, and she published some of the words of one of the rituals that talked about the women's menstrual flow and et cetera, part of what it means to be a woman. And that just caused this explosion from the right wing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we figured because they're already, even before the thing had started, we were getting... that kind of thing, you know, that
was that a surprise, do you think? Or how did people feel or react?
Well, I don't think we went into it thinking we were going to have people, react in the way that they did. It's just something And it was, and we knew that they were going into some of the workshops. I have a friend that happens to be a lesbian pastor, and she got outed because somebody went to the workshop and they were talking about the United Methodist self-avowed practicing homosexual, and she laughingly joked, "Well, who's practicing?" Mm-hmm. And she got outed to her congregation.
And what happened?
Well, she got moved. She ended up having to go on honorable location. And that kind of thing already was starting there.
Yes.
You know, was starting there. And then it just kind of got more and more as the Presbyterian layman and the IRD and the Good News folks started doing their publishing. It's just was an interesting phenomenon. I really don't think we were expecting it.
Yeah. Well, did the backlash affect you directly?
No. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason is because I was looked on within the conference as being that radical. Mm-hmm. I was chair of the Methodist Federation for Social Action chapter here. And when we would put in legislation at annual conference, we believed that people should know who it was that was putting in the legislation, and we put in Methodist Federation for Social Action, Mary Lee Fithian chair. Mm-hmm. And so everybody thought I was writing it, but I wasn't. We just wanted to know who the people were. And so I was looked on as, you know, kind of radical by a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so, no, it didn't. The one thing I did have was that our bishop had been on the advisory committee, you know, just for names of important people. And one of the people in the Minnesota Good News group called me on the phone and said, "Oh, I see our bishop was on your advisory committee." And I said, "Well, yeah, she's listed there, but I can't think of a time we ever asked her for any advice." And he said, "Oh, thank you." And he hung up. So, mm-hmm. You know, no, personally, mm-hmm. It didn't, because they knew how I would respond.
Yes, yeah. So how did you react when this was happening?
Well, I was annoyed. Mm-hmm. I was angry. And I was sad. Mm-hmm. Because, and it goes on today yet in the church, because we should be, you know, even if we aren't of one mind, as John Wesley said, you know, can't we love one another? Can't we, you know, get along? Mm-hmm. And obviously that the answer is no, mm-hmm. is no. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had intended just to have one conference, and that was going to be it. And then with this backlash, we knew we couldn't let it go.
I want to hear more about that, Mary Lee.
Well, there was a lot of discussion about how we should respond, mm-hmm. by the committee, and
this was the committee that planned the conference.
Yeah, well, at that point, that's what there was.
Yes, you know, right.
when we were evaluating and going, you know, doing the thing, and it was finally decided that we were not going to respond in the same way they were responding to us. That what we were going to do was what you do when you're nonviolent. You respond with love. You love your enemy. You love people that are attacking you. But we also saw what was happening to people. People who lost jobs. People who were suddenly a litmus test if they wanted to be ordained. Did you attend that conference? Well, sorry, we're not going to ordain you. Just real problems, particularly in particular denominations. I remember somebody who'd been on the planning committee who didn't want anybody to know she had been on the planning committee because she was just going into a new job out east in a kind of conservative area. Mm. Her husband had just been called to a church there, and she was afraid of what was going to happen. Mm. And so that should not happen to people. Mm-hmm. You know, life shouldn't be that way. And I, you know, I'm still kind of angry and annoyed at it. But what we decided to do was to become an organization. And we formed the Reimagining Community. We got a 501(c). We met on a regular basis. We had a steering committee or a board, whatever you want to call it, and and officers, and we began advertising that we were still around, and we started this wonderful newsletter that Nancy and Pam did, and eventually was basically Nancy. Again, a thing that helped women realize that they were created like God, in the image of God, that they could do theology even if they weren't professional theologians. And that was just, you know, and that went on for 10 years.
Yeah. And just one other thing, was it a fairly easy decision? Did the committee quickly come to the decision that we need to form an organization, we need to do more conferences?
I think we did a lot of discussion about, how we were going to respond. But the thing that we did decide definitely is we weren't going to do what they were doing to us. We weren't going to attack back.
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I can't even remember exactly how we ended up becoming an organization, but we did. Yeah. And so I was on that board for a while, and then at one point I became one of the co-chairs.
Oh, do you remember? Did you help in planning? Do you remember roughly when you would have been a co-chair?
It was probably end of the 90s or early 2000, I think.
Sure.
I left in 2003 because we were moving to California, and that was the year that they decided to disband because we were all getting older. We just, somehow or other, young people tend to think that after the fight's been fought, that the fight's over. Sorry to use that kind of language, but it doesn't. If you don't stay on it, it just comes back, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we had a hard time involving younger women, and just to go outside of reimagining, I have daughters, so my own daughters, when they went on to college, didn't think that they had to deal with anything to do with feminism anymore. It was all done. Our parents had done this. Our mothers and so forth had taken care of it. Everything was okay now. And then my oldest daughter, went into biochemical engineering. She wanted to be a biochemical engineer. And she hit the classes where they would say, "Well, what's a beautiful girl like you doing here?" And all of a sudden, she's starting to see, no, it hasn't been solved. It's just sort of underground now. And she went out of there and ended up into biochemistry, got her degree there, and ended up in law school. But
wow,
you know, that's a jump. But what I'm saying is that that generation just wasn't ready to do anything. And by the time the rest of us got to 2003, I mean, we're in our 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us,
mm-hmm.
not all of us, but most of us.
Yeah.
And you could just get tired after a while.
Yeah. And you were involved the whole 10 years of the community.
Yeah. And
on the committee or a co-chair.
And I also volunteered in the office when we didn't have staff.
Yeah.
Or when we only had part-time staff. So I was in the office answering questions and answering the phones. And
yeah. Were you actually able to participate in some of the later conferences?
Yeah. I did one or two of them. Yeah. I didn't go to all of them, but I went to one or two of them.
Yeah. Well, you have a lot of experience here, so it would be really helpful to hear what aspects of reimagining were most significant to you and why.
One was that we were able to reach so many women who were out there alone. And, I mean, there's still some of the small groups that we had formed that are going, have been for almost 25 years. Mm-hmm. And that's significant, I think. I think that's really significant. Mm-hmm. And that there began to be movement even among male clergy, etc., to be thinking more about what the language was in the church and the services and so forth. I think they've gotten away from that a little bit now. But we're starting to see that there were things happening in churches, at least the more progressive churches, that were positive.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and when I say positive for women, I really mean it's positive for everybody, because if it's positive for women, it's going to be positive for men as well. But our target audience was those women who just were thought, you know, my place is in the kitchen, in the Sunday school, and in the choir.
Mm-hmm. How do you think reimagining helped with that? What did reimagining do?
I think it stirred the hearts of people. Mm-hmm. I think it stirred the hearts of people both negatively and positively, but it did. It stirred something in the lives of people, in the hearts of people, that caused them to think differently about their relationship to God, relationship mm-hmm. to Jesus Christ, the relationship to the church, yeah. and to one another.
Yeah. And did it do that for you?
Pretty much, you know, mm-hmm. but I was, you know, in churches where sometimes I had to deal with that, from this angle, but always
the underground, the resistance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But always managed to say, well, we're not singing that hymn because look at the language.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't reflect my understanding of God, and I'm boss today.
And how do people respond to that?
Most of them would say, oh, okay, mm-hmm. you know. But then we would talk about it and explain. Mm-hmm. In one church I was in, they'd had a woman pastor at one point, but they must not have been a good experience because she ended up going out of ministry, at least parish ministry.
Mm.
So then there were several pastors in between, and some of them had been kind of bad experiences for them. So when they got this woman, they didn't know it. And this lady came up to me and she said, what do we call you? I said, well, what did you call? And I named one of the former pastors. Mm-hmm. And, well, we called him by his name. And I said, well, that's what you do mean. You mean we don't call you a ministress? And I looked at her and said, if you ever do, I'm going to kick you in the butt. And then I walked away.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my exact language.
Yes.
And she appreciated that, you mm-hmm. know. And I never got called ministress. And they were people who were really supportive of my mm-hmm. ministry.
Mm-hmm.
They'd say to me, Mary, you're working too hard. Mm-hmm. You know, don't work so many hours. Or you know, they really watched out for me. But there still were areas where it didn't necessarily be women, but it would be other groups like LGBT people in the church and so forth that we really had to start working on too. And I think this helped us in a sense to get a handle on that and to mm-hmm. to begin to do that.
Reimagining did this?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Got us past some of the fears.
Mm. So despite the backlash, you feel like the end result wasn't, it got past the fears? Could you say a little bit more about that?
In some churches, I think that they probably were churches where there was a sense of progressivism already.
Yes.
I mean, maybe not real actively progressive, but they were not real fundamentalist and literal Bible interpretation and that sort of thing. And I think it's had an impact, but then over the last few years, I think that some of that's gone kind of by the wayside because we haven't been able to keep the movement going. I mean, I saw it as what we ended up with as a movement.
Mm-hmm.
And we just haven't been able to keep that going, and I'm hoping that this new thing will start some of that again, and some of the ways in which we're thinking about doing things will put us in a position where it isn't a bunch of old ladies talking down to young
mm-hmm.
young women.
Mm-hmm. And as you think about moving forward with reimagining, what do you think are the contributions in theology or liturgy, or what contributions can it make to the next generations?
Well, I think that one of the contributions would be with language, because language is a big thing that affects people kind of without their knowing it. You know, when I would go home and I'd be crying, and it took me a long, long time to figure out what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was something deep inside of me. And I think you could talk about it in a lot of places now where you couldn't have talked about it before. Mm-hmm. Could say, hey, you know, isn't there a better way of saying this? Mm-hmm. And I think that it can contribute to the fact that people can start to question. They can question the theology that's being preached in their church. They can question what's happening. Are we a church that's sitting back and just being comfortable and, you know, coming to church on Sunday and having our Bible study on Wednesday and mm-hmm. so forth and not doing anything outside the walls? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that all of that.
Well, how would you compare where we are today to where we were in 1993?
Ooh. Well, I think we're way ahead of 1993.
Mm-hmm. In what ways?
I don't think I'd be shunned. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we're at a point where women sometimes just need to be reminded, and other people need to just be reminded. Oh yeah, yeah, that's
reminded of
that this isn't all man's world, a man's church, a man's God. Mm-hmm. We can bring it up pretty much without fear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At least in some places.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think is the greatest legacy of the reimagining community?
The greatest legacy is having women's voices heard.
And when you say women's voices, are you thinking of the speakers?
I'm thinking of that, but I'm also thinking that from that has expanded into those who weren't speakers but are now able to say, hey, you know, what about this? Or, mm-hmm. hey, I'm not so sure about that thing, you know? Mm-hmm. Or do we always have to use that kind of language? I mean, women's voices can be heard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did your involvement in reimagining change your perspective on feminist theology and or the church, if it did?
It probably didn't, because I think I was already pretty much there.
Yeah.
But I did probably heard more different voices than I would have if it had just been up to me to read.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it was all there in one place, or it led me to things that I could read and that I could hear in other venues.
Yeah.
That I wouldn't have otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about a reimagining website, and do you have any thoughts about what we should include, who would benefit, and how could they find out about it? Any thoughts about the website?
I think we want to list resources for people.
Such as?
Well, so if somebody writes a really good article someplace, a lot of us won't know about it unless there's somebody who tells us. And so the website can do that kind of education. I think it can maybe a question answer kind of format somewhere along the way.
And who would do the answers?
That could come, and we could say, oh, well, what do we think? And we could say, well, here's what we think.
Oh, okay, yes.
Somebody else may have another viewpoint. Here's a resource you could go to. I mean, you know, I don't know.
Just
thinking.
Good. This is good. Brainstorming is good.
Brainstorming is good. Yeah. I haven't really done a lot of thinking. You've probably done a lot more thinking about it than I have at this point.
Who do you think would benefit from it?
Who would benefit from
it? Yes. Well,
I think women in seminary. One place. Women who don't go to seminary. I remember the newsletter where we had interviews of people. Mm-hmm. And there was always a theological discussion going on someplace there. I mean, kind of a little more academic, but theology talked or said in a way that the common person can understand it.
Mm-hmm.
That's We have a thought of the month or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, this is good. This is good. Creative. Yes. This has been great. Is there anything we haven't talked about or haven't discussed that you would like to add?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Mary Lee, thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Really appreciate it.